Ask any musician. The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Now let's crank up the jam. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Well, night lunch is over. Time to get back to work. Almost 2 minutes past the hour, 2 minutes past 11 p.m. here on the East Coast. Lots of fun stuff still left over, I'm imagining, on Peter's plate. I've got some extras left over to share, too. And I'll bet you John's got some stuff that didn't quite make the first cut for the for All Foxed Up. So I think we should have a pretty enjoyable hour here. What do you say, guys?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. I just kind of ran into the studio and kind of connected. So, I mean, feel free to lead the way, either of you, because I'm slightly ill prepared, but I'm getting it together. I am finding it interesting, though, that it's seeming apparent that Miss Clinton is going to drop out. Am I actually following this right? We're not going to drag this out to the convention.
Your lips to God's ears. Is that true, Bob? That they've been telling her to, but is she?
I haven't seen anything that definitive yet. I saw Timmy Russert declare that it was all over, but
and she canceled her TV appearances for today and whatnot.
But she still has other appearances scheduled later in the week.
And she's put another what? She has to decide whether to put another $6 million in, right?
That would appear to be the ante for this hand in the game.
That would have to be a sign to you. You know, I mean, she didn't have any, you know, absolute knockover victories yesterday.
There it is. Oh yeah, Larry Johnson, former CIA worker, and what a bio Larry has. He's worked with the CIA. He was the U.S. State Department's deputy director of counterterrorism, and he's got a resume a mile long. Anyway, he'll be with us today to discuss something that's a pet peeve of his, and I want to hear his opinion on it. This Bill Ayers, that's been the press has been back and forth with Barack Obama about his association with Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground. Larry is an expert on the situation, and he'll be with us at the bottom of the hour to talk about that. Okay. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. I see the stock market is up 42 points right now. Oil's at $123. You know, I see they're selling calls in July on the oil market at $150. Oh my. Let's see, a 42-gallon barrel of oil right now. I think you're getting like 19 and a half gallons of gas out of that after it's refined. So, I don't know. That would leave gas where? Somewhere around $4.50? Oh, it's going to hurt. Going to hurt a lot. Anyway, welcome to the program today. Hope you don't have to fill up your gas tank today. I haven't. In fact, I will tell you... mine is my car is set in the garage all week long. I had to go someplace one day this week, but I went with somebody else, so it's set in the garage all week long. Conserving gasoline, mostly not, and I'll admit to you, not to, so much to be a conservationist, but to save a buck. It's getting ridiculous. Are you the same as me? You don't take those You get a day off. You don't go for a drive anymore. You don't when you make out a list of things you got to get. You make up a strategy on the paper. See, I'm going to go here. I'm going to go here. I'm going to go here. That way, I only have to drive this many miles. Yeah, it's getting that way, and a little more carpooling going on, which isn't a bad thing. Too bad we don't have more mass transit. We have none here in Southwest Florida, nothing at all. Well, there's a bus that runs, but it's not real handy. But mass transit, I think, is going to be the answer. And I, as I've often mentioned, every time I go to Washington and get on that metro system of theirs there, that's something that should have been absolutely a necessity for every metropolitan area in the United States to have a system like that. Man, what a great system that is. Anyway, a lot to talk about today. We'll get around to talking about Mr. McCain some. I see there's a little flap going on about his wife. Also see that one of the Republican congressmen is owned up to having a love child, okay? Yeah. I can't think of his name. Staten Island Representative Vito Fasella. Conservative Republican, by the way. This off of ABC News. He's acknowledged that imperfections in his personal life has caused pain to the people I love. Yes, and so he's admitted that, and it's over the coming months, I will continue to do my job, and I work hard to heal the deep wounds I have caused. Yes, he has three children with his wife, and now he's got one with some other gal, too. All right. So, another Republican congressman. Well, what the hell? Stuff happens, you know what I mean? And Cindy McCain says she'll never release her tax returns. Of course, we had the Washington Post. What did I have this around here? I printed out something. Wouldn't you know? I can't find it. I'm so organized. Let me see here. Where is this? Well, anyway, Cindy McCain says she's not going to give up her tax return. Says she has no intentions of doing so. That she and John, Sidney McCain III, have filed individual tax returns for something like, I don't know how many years they've been married, 28 years, something like that. She says she's not going to do it. Just not going to do it. And I got this down, this note out of the Washington Post, back when John Kerry was running, and they had an editorial in. Yes, they did, and then said it won't do. When Teresa Hines Carey said she wasn't going to give up her tax returns, the Washington Post said it won't do. That was our bottom line in 1984 when Representative Geraldine Ferraro of New York, the Democratic vice presidential candidate, balked at releasing her husband's income tax returns. And it went on to say, though Representative Ferraro says she will release her own tax returns, she cannot treat her spouse as a separate entity for this purpose, and still claims to be providing complete data. 20 years later, in the midst of similar controversy, we feel, this is the Washington Post talking, we feel much the same way. Teresa Hines Carey, wife of the Democratic presidential nominee, should make her tax returns public. Ms. Carey has been reluctant to do so. Campaign spokesman Michael Maheen now says she is preparing to make summary information available, though not necessarily her return. That's an improvement over no disclosure, but it is short of what ought to be done. That from the Washington Post. And yet, we have Cindy McCain. Cindy Barbie doll. I'm going to start calling her Barbie. Man, that's just one plastic-looking woman. I'm sorry. That's my opinion. That is my opinion. She looks like a plastic Barbie doll. And acts like one, too, evidently, from what I hear. Anyway, she's not going to give up her tax return. So she has no intentions of doing so. I say let's let that go. I don't necessarily need to see what's in her tax return. I really don't. I'd be more interested in seeing what's in her medicine cabinet, really. You know, she had that little deal of stealing pills from that foundation that she had. Yeah. See, those puppies have a little trouble with the drugs, her and Rush and all that. And, well, okay, I won't go there. Both parties a little bit guilty of that. Anyway, welcome to the show today. I see Bushy had some more to say about the Democrats. Yeah, he should talk. I've just been reading a lot since a couple of days ago when we last talked, and I've really got a problem. I'm really kind of down over this, and I know some of you are as well. And it's the problem that all we're talking about now is politics, and all we're talking about is, and we'll continue to do so. I know we will, but there's a war going on. And we're not doing anything about it. I know there's a few of you holding up your hands and say, well, I held up a sign, I marched, I did this, I did that. But as a nation, we're really showing that we don't have any guts. We sit here and we let this war go on. And what's wrong with America? Why don't we protest? Where are the massive protest crowds of the Vietnam era? You remember what that was like, at least many of you do. I do. There were protests all over the place, just all the time. And is it just because we have an all-volunteer army that the nation doesn't seem to give a damn that thousands have been killed? And many more thousands wounded or maimed for life or psychologically scarred for the rest of their days? I mean... It's just disconcerting to me to know that to have to ask the question: Have we become such a selfish society that if it's not our kin or our friends that are getting killed, we just don't give a damn? There just seems to be, I don't know. We seem to be a nation of uncommon greed and selfishness right now. We really do. I mean, let's face it: all of us, to some extent, are a little bit selfish. Some more than others. But when you start out with one of the most well-known verses from the Gospels, from Mark, where Jesus said, for what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? That's what I'm thinking the problem is here right now in this country. I think we're losing the American soul. We Americans are willing just to work so hard, work overtime, work so hard, two jobs, whatever, for toys and material things. Right now we're working so hard to hang on by our fingernails just for the necessities of life, and yet we don't work hard at all for the things that really matter. And I'm talking things that really matter aside from feeding our family and putting a shelter over their head, food, clothing, and shelter. But the things that really matter for our nation, freedom and justice and liberty and self-determination, we allow this war to go on even though almost all of us realize and have realized for a long time that it's senseless and it's immoral. And it isn't as though it's some secret hidden away someplace that we can ignore. We all know about it. We all know Iraqi civilians are being needlessly slaughtered this very day. We know that includes innocent women and children. We've seen the pictures. We all know that many more Americans will die in Iraq. I just think we're losing our individual souls. We're losing the soul of America. And how tragic that is. Not just for us, but for the entire world. We have the capacity in this nation to do so much good for humanity. And we have done so in the past. And there's so much to be done on this earth for the good of mankind. We're still a rich nation. We still have the means with which to help others who are suffering from poverty and disease and famine all around this world. And I think something like half the world is living on $2 a day or less. And yet we squander our resources on a needless war. And let's face it, it's something that was wanted and it was caused by a handful of men with, well, I hate to say it, about leadership in this country, but men with evil in their hearts. And we stood by and we allowed it to happen. And I feel bad, and I know many of you do as well, that I am not as proud of this country as I want to be. And that makes me sad. Makes me sad because as a nation, we're not fulfilling our destiny. Sad that someday, when the history of our generation studied by scholars and school kids, we'll be joining the Romans as a society that rose to greatness and then fell because of greed and the lust for more power and material things. Makes you wonder what is the fate of this country? What is the fate of the world that we're trying to dominate? It's an ugly situation. I find myself using that word a lot lately, ugly. But it's a word that I put on so many things that I see today that are so bad. And I see now that the war's way behind the economy and the number one concern by people of this country, and to some extent I understand that. But I don't know how that we can ever, as a nation, have a clean conscience and allow this thing to keep going on without doing something about it, and we're not. There have been, one or two fairly decent-sized demonstrations where the people outside of the White House, the mobs outside of the White House, all day, every day, like there was back during Vietnam. And is it selfishness? Is it because all of our young people today aren't demonstrating because they know they don't have to go to the war? I mean, I can tell you, back in my day, just about everybody, every young person, guys, were worried like hell they were going to have to go to Vietnam. Only knew one guy ever that wanted to go. He's one of those guys that grew up with G.I. Joe dolls and, you know, wore fatigues to school. Before wearing fatigues to school was cool. But we're failing somewhere, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to get the nation up in arms enough to march on Washington, to occupy Washington, to put enough pressure on our representatives in the government to put a stop to this. And the press has massively failed us. I think Thomas Jefferson, he wrote a letter to John Jay once, and I'll probably butcher it. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's our liberty depends on the freedom of the press. Thomas Jefferson was big on the press, and as he well should have been. But our liberty depends on the freedom of the press, and that cannot be limited without being lost. And our press is being lost. Make no mistake, it is being lost, and at least the corporate media, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we'll be able to depend upon the Internet for actual truth and news from now on. That is until the corporate world monopolizes that too. But we, as a people in this country, we're letting this nation down. We're letting the heirs, the next generation, down by not doing something about this. Not only is this morally wrong, we're bankrupting the next generation, which is morally wrong as well. Kids growing up today, 8, 10 years old, don't even realize what's going to hit them someday with a massive deficit that we'll have. And we'll be indebted to China and the Middle Eastern countries forever, as long as they live. Well, have I griped enough today? 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have you join the program. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Listening to the Guy James Show, coming to you live from our beautiful studios here in Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area, streaming all around the country, all around the world. Welcome to the program today. Glad to have you, especially you, along with us today. Kind of a sad note today. See how old you are. Eddie Arnold died today. Yesterday, maybe it was. 89 years old, Eddie Arnold. Remember that song? I don't know. Probably a lot of you youngsters, and you don't remember Eddie Arnold. Some of you do. Make the world go away. You know, remember that song? And I'm sending you a big bouquet of roses. One for every time you broke my heart. Remember those songs? Ah, yes. Long time ago. Songs from my youth. But Eddie Arnold, gone, the legend in country music. And he wasn't just country music. He lived, born in around Nashville and lived around there most of his life. I think he was born in Hendersonville. Anyway, Eddie Arnold, a music legend, is gone. 866-546-5254. We've got Larry Johnson coming up with us in just a very, very few minutes. In fact, we'll break away in just another 3 minutes and get Larry on the phone. And he will have a lot to say, something you may like, something you may not. We're going to talk about the Bill Ayers story in conjunction with Barack Obama. And let's vet it. Let's hear about it. And let's hear the truth. Let's decide what's true and what isn't true about it. So that's what we need to do. Just taking a look at the internet here today. Well, never mind. Never mind. Hey, have any of you wondered why you haven't seen Oprah Winfrey out on the stumping for Barack Obama lately? Have you wondered about that? You know, she was all Barack Obama, Barack Obama, Barack Obama, and went out and hit the campaign trail with him. I wondered about this and just had a conversation about it not too long ago. Turns out, she has not said this, but in January 2007, Oprah had a 74% favorability rating. And in May of 2007, she says she was going to endorse Barack Obama. And by August, her ratings went down by 13%. And by October of last year, her ratings were back up to 66%. And then she went out on the stump with Barack Obama, and her favorability ratings dropped to 55%. 55%. Oprah figured out that it wasn't a good idea to offend half the women in America, evidently. Which she did by coming out for one or the other. Maybe not the smartest thing she ever did. I mean, she's rich enough. She doesn't have to worry about that anymore, I suppose. But when you, you know, you have a show almost strictly for women, and then you go out and campaign against the first serious woman candidate for president that we've ever had, well, it wasn't taken so well by a lot of gals. And I understand why. I most certainly do. It makes sense to me. So, Oprah, and a lot of these people like that, maybe use your microphone for something else. I don't know. I've been criticized for saying that, but I just don't appreciate showbiz people. I know some of them do some good and all that, but it's like Ed Asner. What the hell do I care what Ed Asner has to say? I really don't. I don't. Call me weird. That's just me. 866-546-5254. We're going to break away for a moment or two, and we will get our guest on the phone, and we'll be right back with you. So don't go any place at all, okay? Stay, well, don't even go that far. We'll be right back.
Across the county line.
back with you here on the Guy James Show. Welcome, everybody. And as promised, we have Larry Johnson with us. Larry has got a resume a mile long, and we've talked about it before some, but Larry's been with the CIA, he's been with the State Department and their Office of Counterterrorism. He's been around the block, let me put it that way. I would probably like to have been a fly on the wall and in on some of the things Larry's been in on. But Larry, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to be with you.
And by the way, let me just plug his site. He's got a great site. I read it every single day, first thing in the morning, noquarterusa.net/blog. Have I got that right? I think I did.
Actually, it was noquarterusa.net will get them there.
Okay, noquarterusa.net. And it's a great site. I do read it every single day, and you should as well. Whether you agree or not, there's going to be a lot of insight on there for you. And Larry and I were talking during the break there. The reason I wanted him to come on today was to discuss an issue that's going to come up in if Barack Obama ends up being the nominee for the Democratic Party. There's an issue that's going to be front and center, and I don't think a lot of people understand it a lot. I don't think a lot of people know as much as they should know about it, but I think he's going to get hit right across the head with it, and it's something we need to talk about, and it's his association with Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground. And now, Larry, I know you know quite a bit about that, and I know that you think it's something that has to be vetted and probably hasn't been vetted the way it should be.
Not only has it not been vetted, Barack Obama has lied about his relationship with Bill Ayers. And this is not a guilt by association. Guilt by association is that, you know, if you and I were going to the Washington Nationals baseball game separately and we sat in the stadium, just because we were both there on the same day at the same game doesn't necessarily mean that there's a relationship between us. But if I said, hey, Guy, why don't you come and sit in my seats with me and, you know, I buy your ticket and I buy your food, that's very different from just being in the same stadium at the same time. Well, when you look at the relationship between Bill Ayers and Barack Obama, what we discover is that in 1995, Bill Ayers sets up a foundation. It's called the Annenberg Challenge Foundation. It's funded for $50 million. He's the co-founder of it. And who does he select to be the chairman of that foundation? None other than Barack Obama. Now, why Barack has not been very public about explaining why he managed a $50 million foundation when there have been questions about his competence as a manager, it's just, I find that very puzzling. So he's obviously hiding something about this relationship, because otherwise he'd be front and center saying, hey, you know, I headed up a $50 million foundation and I worked with Bill Ayers on it, and, you know, there's nothing to run and hide from if it's on the up and up. But the reality is, when you begin looking at this fabric of relationships with William Ayers, and the reason Ayers is of such concern is this is a guy who was a terrorist, an unrepentant terrorist, remains to be the same, who planted bombs at the U.S. Capitol, at the U.S. State Department, and at the Pentagon. He was never tried and convicted because the FBI mismanaged the evidence back at the time. But he was quoted as recently as on 9/11 by the New York Times, commenting that his only regret from those days during the 60s was that he hadn't done enough, hadn't planted enough bombs.
And his organization was doing this, why, for our younger listeners?
Well, the Weathermen were, you know, during the Vietnam War, there were two movements, basically, in this country against the war. There was an anti-war movement that was embodied by people like Dr. Martin Luther King that was nonviolent. And then there was a group like the Weathermen, like the Students for the Democratic Society, the SDS, like the Black Panthers, others that did engage in violence as a means to stop the war. And Bill Ayers was directly involved as a senior official with the Weather Underground.
And hasn't changed his spots, really?
No, not at all. I mean, he is genuinely unrepentant. You know, it'd be one thing to say that, and people say, well, that happened 40 years ago when Barack Obama was 8 years old. Okay, that's true. But Barack Obama was not 8 years old in 1995 when he went to work for Bill Ayers. And as somebody who wants to run for a high political office did not have enough sense to know that you cannot hang out with a guy who openly espouses his so-called regret that he didn't do enough, that he hadn't planted enough bombs. And there was there have been some pretty eloquent pieces written recently, one by, I think the guy's name was Danny Murtaugh, whose father was actually threatened with death and a bomb planted outside their house in New York City by the likes of Bill Ayers. So, this is one that if the Democrats think that the Republicans will let that go come the fall, they have not studied anything about how Republicans run a political campaign over the last, 40 years.
Now, Bill Ayers is a teacher or professor at the University of Chicago now?
University of Illinois, I think.
Okay.
In Chicago.
Was he in 1995, do you know?
Yes.
So
he was, in fact, he played a critical role with Barack Obama. Not only did he hire Barack Obama in 1995, but he also then was working with Barack and plotting on how to oust Alice Palmer, who was the long-standing state senator, who initially thought she would run, I think, for Dan Rostenkowski's House seat, then decided not to do it. But at that point, Barack had then jumped into the race and went through pretty extraordinary lengths to sabotage her ability to run. So it left some really lingering ill feelings there in Chicago with Alice Palmer. In fact, my understanding is she's been working for Hillary to get her elected. But Bill Ayers and his wife, Bernadine Dorn, who's also another member of the Weather Underground, all worked with Barack back in 1995 on that first campaign. They helped raise funds. They helped organize the beginning of that campaign. So when you look at the relationship with Bill Ayers, we're not talking association. We're talking a deep-seated relationship where Ayers really played a critical role in Barack Obama establishing himself in the Chicago area. If you go back and look at Bill Ayers' father, who was a senior executive with a major law firm, and I think it was Con Ed, by being in that position by virtue of his wealth, he still sort of carved out to help his son, even though his son was this unrepentant terrorist. Nonetheless, I guess fathers being fathers sometimes will overlook some of their son's stupidity.
Well, and we're talking about a guy that preceded a Timothy McVeigh. I mean, we're talking about that kind of a person. Now my question to you is, would it be credible to state a man in of Barack Obama's intelligence and his educational background and all that, would it be credible for him to say, I didn't know that Bill Ayers had been involved in that sort of thing?
No, it's impossible for him not to have known. I mean, it was a common knowledge in the Chicago area, and I think that, in fact, the fact that Barack Obama has been so deceptive in his answers about his relationship with Bill Ayers is in itself telling. Because, come back, if, one of the issues that has emerged in the campaign, at least early on, was the question of experience. And the only thing he would cite on experience is the speech that he gave supposedly in 2002. And yet he never talked about the fact that he had actually been the chairman of a $50 million foundation. Now, part of the reason for that, I believe, is the fact that just what was not accomplished at that foundation, it turned out not to be a very, very effectively run or managed. But apart from that, it gets more to the heart of who hired him, who paid him, who was directing him from the standpoint as chairman of that foundation. And you discover that the name is William Ayers.
And you say the Annenberg Foundation funded this?
Yes.
$50 million worth?
It's called the Annenberg Challenge Foundation. So the Walter Annenberg Foundation, as I understand it, did a variety of grants to different cities where they would incorporate in this challenge grant and also try to raise local money. So, you know, here Barack Obama from 1995, and he stayed in that position through 2003. So that's an eight-year relationship starting with Bill Ayers. So you've got that work relationship. You have the political relationship with William Ayers helping Barack Obama raise money. And then as you move into it, you find that William Ayers and Barack Obama both get appointed to the Woods Fund, which is another public foundation. And there they work together to direct money to organization, the Arab American Action Network, I think it was called, chaired by a man named Rashid Khalidi, who at one time had been the spokesman for the PLO. So you get these kinds of relationships that come the general campaign in the fall will make it very difficult for Democrats to run and support that when it starts getting the attention. And unfortunately, the media has been almost in a conspiracy to give Barack a pass and not address these issues, thinking that somehow if you ignore them, they'll go away. They're not going to go away.
Well, that's exactly my feeling. I mean, you and I will both get criticized for talking about this from people on the left, but for any of you listening that think that that the Republicans don't have a dossier 6 inches thick on this thing about Barack and his association with William Ayers, you're crazy.
Well, and, you know, you and I are both old enough to remember the campaign that George McGovern ran so pitifully.
Sure.
In 1972. Here was a man who was an actual, a genuine war hero. He had had more combat as a bombardier, as a bomber pilot during World War II, where, you know, those kinds of people were lucky to have survived the war, and ran against Richard Nixon, who had no combat experience and simply wore a uniform of convenience. Yet the Republicans succeeded in painting a real war hero as an incompetent peacenik who was going to sell out America. Well, if they can do that to an actual to a guy who's actually been in combat war and wore the uniform, what are they going to do to a guy who's not had military service and who has had actual relationships with folks who have advocated and carried out terrorist attacks in the United States? And has, in fact, been an employee of such people. So, you know, it's just insane for people to believe that somehow that, you know, that's not a, that's a non-issue that they won't have to worry about come fall. And I think it's something that superdelegates really need to take into account.
Well, and it's one of those things that later on down the road, you and I and a lot of people are going to say, you know, we're going to say, hey, we told you this was coming. This is
yeah.
This
we tried to tell you.
Yeah. Well.
You warn and you warn and you warn. It was like a conversation I had today with a friend of mine that we had some very heated exchanges about 4 years ago when I told him what was going. You know that they were lying about the insurgency, that they what was happening in Iraq was not as it was being, the reality of what was going on was not what was being told on the evening news. That you had these media, these military personnel who were being used to pass propaganda to the public. And at the time, he just, you know, argued with me and disagreed with me very intensely. And then today, he was asking me about the Richard Sanchez books, and he was stunned to learn that. And I just, you know, reminded him that, you know, you heard it first from me 4 years ago. You didn't believe it at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I have a little more credibility with it.
Well, that's a little tough for anybody to say they're stunned over that now. I think there was enough. Hey, just as a quick aside, and again, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. If I can ask you, do you have any knowledge of this raid on Block's office?
No, just what I've been hearing.
Okay,
I think it is, you know, pretty disturbing.
Pretty disturbing. I think mostly it appears to me that everybody figures there's a new administration coming in, possibly, and they better do something. So I don't know. It's the way it looks to me anyway. All right. Well, Larry Johnson, I want to thank you so much for being with us. This is a very interesting story. It's one that does need to be completely vetted, because if we don't, someone else will, and you can bet they're planning, they're drooling over it right now.
Absolutely, so, Guy. I mean, it's not going away.
No. Larry Johnson, thanks so much for being with us on the program today. It is great hearing from you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, bye now.
Bye.
it is a story, and we've had this conversation with several people in Washington, insiders that say that this is something that'll be at the very top of their agenda against Barack Obama, should he be the nominee. And it's certainly starting to look like it's going to be Barack Obama who's the nominee, barring something really wild happening. And I've thought a lot about it, and I'll probably talk about it a little later on in the program today, but I'm not seeing a way that it can happen right now. So I could be wrong, but there would have to be something major, and I don't think this story is going to do it. But and that's not the reason we had it on today. It's something that needs to be talked about. It's one of those things that if Barack Obama is the candidate, it's got to be fully vetted. It's got to be headed off at the pass. It has to be fully explained, if it can be explained, because just like Larry mentioned, George McGovern, not a more honorable man who's ever run for the presidency of the United States, and I might add, nor a nicer guy. I sat with him at a JJ dinner here a while back, sat right beside him at the table, and he's one of the most entertaining and likable men. That's the first time I ever met him. He has a summer or a winter home here, and just engaging, and got up and spoke for an hour with no notes, and there wasn't any anybody in the audience that wanted him to stop. It was that interesting. So, you know, like Larry said, if they can do that to a man like George McGovern, if they can do that to a John Kerry, if they can demonize a man with such goodness as Al Gore, Mike Dukakis, look at the people that they've slain politically. Just look at it, and mainly look at how they've done it. So don't be surprised when this comes up, because it will. It's not something that, you know, I've heard these stories from, and been criticized from somebody. Like, whoa, don't bring that up. Republicans don't need to know that. Well, you know, they've got their political operatives deep inside their little caves in Washington, D.C. right now, coming up with everything and anything that you can imagine. They're out on the road seeking information. They're doing background checks. They will know every moment of Barack Obama's life. They'll know the history of it, as they already know every moment of Hillary Clinton's life. They'll know it all about Barack Obama, and they will use any little piece of it that they can to do their best to ruin him. So keep that in mind. It's a fact. It's a hard fact of politics, and it's something that's not going to go away. Not going to go away. Let's talk about John McCain for just a moment. Speaking of Republicans, have you heard him talk lately? Do you take time to really listen to what the man says? He's got a bold plan for this missile defense now that we've been talking about, and he said, and let me quote him, he said, "The first thing I would do is make sure we have a missile defense system in place in Czechoslovakia and Poland. I don't care what Putin's objections are to it." Now, Mr. John Sidney McCain, you really need to study your world history a little better. It has changed a bit since you were in school 100 years ago. I should talk. The Czech Republic hasn't been around, I believe, since, and I should have looked this up, but I think it was 1991, 1992. The Czechoslovakia hasn't been around since then. It's broken up into the Czech Republic and Slovakia. Actually, Slovakia's Bohemia and Moravia, I believe, now. But and I also heard him say not too long ago that we have to make sure the Soviet Union doesn't have too much influence in Europe. Soviet Union, again, Mr. McCain, Senator McCain, where the hell have you been? Remember the walls down, and remember that happened, and you had this guy Ronnie Reagan president, and shortly after that, not too long after that, not because of, but and shortly after that, the Soviet Union boom was gone. It's not, there's no such thing as the Soviet Union anymore, Mr. McCain. And there's no such place as Czechoslovakia anymore, Mr. McCain. And if you were some slob on the street that isn't expected to know those things, why, that would be one thing. But when you're a United States senator running for the highest office in the land, you are expected to know those things. You are expected to know about geography. You are expected to know about world history. So I think that's very embarrassing. Very embarrassing for a man out running for president to say things like that. And, you know, and that's not the first time. He had that gaffe not too long ago in Israel. He made a gaffe about the Jewish holiday not too long ago. He's constantly saying these things and really not getting taken to task about it. Actually, the press on his gaffe in Israel, they laughed it up. They yucked it up a little bit. Well, isn't that cute? Isn't that cute? They've cut John McCain more slack than any presidential candidate that I can think of in my lifetime. I really cannot think of another presidential candidate that's had it so good with the press as has John McCain since he threw his hat in the ring. Maybe it's because of this comeback thing that he did. He was all his candidacy was all but dead, and he did make an amazing comeback, I will say. Although, I'm not sure that amazing is what, I don't know if amazing is a word that ought to be used, because when you look at the field he was running against, it was like weak. It was like, oh my God, weak. You know, you think of your Fred Thompsons and your Tom Tancredos and what's that goon out in California? Can't think of his name all of a sudden. But you know what I'm talking about. It was an incredibly, incredibly weak field in the Republicans this year. So for him to surface out of that bunch, and Romney, you know, all the Republicans know Romney. Romney's a chameleon. He'll be whatever he needs to be and would be throughout his adult life, whatever he has to be running for, whichever office, wherever he has to run for, in whichever is his home state, Utah, Massachusetts, or Michigan, he can be whatever he needs to be. And so, you know, it's just one of those situations that he's just was incredible as a candidate. Now, will he end up as VP? I don't know. You think John McCain will take him along in order to woo the right-wingers, the real right-wingers, to go along? They seem to like him. They did seem to like him a little bit anyway. So, we shall see. 866-546-5254. We've got a lot to talk about today, and I do hope in the second hour you will join us. I wanted to mention a note that I got from my friend Stuart, and I don't know if I have time for this before the top of the hour. I think I do. Where are we at with this? Well, again, as I've lost my notes. Anyway, we were talking about this gas tax. I don't know. It's a joke to me, this gas tax elimination, this summer tax holiday. I really do think that's weak. I think it's really, really weak. Going to save everybody a buck or two a week. It's for the summer. Come on. It wasn't a big deal at all. And I don't think anybody's really taking it very seriously. I really don't. But I did want to mention Fox for a minute, if I can. I've only got a couple of minutes before the top of the hour. I've always liked Rachel Maddow. I do. I haven't liked her attitude on MSNBC lately. She has joined the chorus on MSNBC as being all anti-Hillary all the time. 24/7. That's what MSNBC has been, and I haven't liked that. Out of a sense of fairness, I wanted them to be fair. That's all. Yes, I liked one candidate over the other, but I hope you'll consider that I have been fair on this program. I've brought up the shortcomings and the strong suits for both of them, and talked that way throughout this political season. And I think up until not too long ago, I think many of you wouldn't have known which one of them that I had voted for had I not admitted it. But I am tired of MSNBC, Tweety Bird, and Keith Olbermann, who I have great respect for, and Tim Russert. I am to the point where I can't stomach Tim Russert whatsoever. And now Rachel Maddow has joined in on it, too, and I'm sad to see that. Is it because she's employed by them? I don't know. I don't know. But I've always liked I've liked Rachel. She's intellectually, she's probably the top intellectual on any of those programs. There's any question about that. But I'm really tired of their one-sidedness on MSNBC and Russert. For Russert to make a statement like he made the other night, it comes on and says, "Well, now we know who the candidate. We now know who the candidate is." Well, Russert, you make multi-millions of dollars a year there, and you can go on there and say what you like. But for you to come on and proclaim that I, Tim Russert, am telling you now who the candidate is. I mean, you can say, "Hey, I think it is my opinion that this is happening and that's happening, and I think this is probably the way it's going to go." But the pompous way he came on the other night, what was it, after midnight, and said, "We now know who the candidate is," and I don't know if I have it in exactly the right words, but come on, Russert. You're not the god of TV. You don't know everything. It ain't over till it's over. And we'll talk about it being over, and we'll talk. I'll talk about what I think should happen the rest of the way out. Should Hillary stay? Should she graciously drop out? Should we have a ticket, the dream ticket, as they call it, with the two? We shall see. I'm starting to think that that's a pretty good possibility. I really am. That it's a pretty good possibility. There was a long time there where I didn't think that Obama would take Hillary on as a VP. And there was a long time when I didn't think that she would take it. But I'm kind of leaning, some conversations I've had with some folks kind of in the know there, people that behind the scenes in politics are telling me that they think that she would. That's just my opinion and their opinion, but it could well be something that's in the works. It could be well be something that's will be talked about very, very soon. You know, you think of Kennedy and Johnson. They had no love for one another, but John Kennedy finally understood that he needed Lyndon Johnson to run for him in order to win the Oval Office. So don't think that it can't happen this time, because it certainly can. Political expediency goes above all else in these things. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. Don't go away. When we come back, we hope you'll give us a call, discuss some of the issues of the day. You're listening to The Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Be back right after the news.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The FBI is poring over computer records and documents seized in raids Tuesday on the office of Special Counsel and at the home of Special Counsel Scott Block. That office is supposed to enforce civil rights and whistleblower protections for federal workers. But Hans Johnson, president of Washington, D.C.'s Pride at Work chapter, says Block instead tried to dismantle sexual orientation discrimination protections and also attacked union and civil rights of federal workers.
Johnson says it's part of a Bush administration pattern.
To name people to public service positions exercising a great deal of public trust who have a fundamental disbelief or antagonism towards the very mission of the agency they are named to head.
The FBI raids and grand jury subpoenas on the Office of Special Counsel and Block's home are focused on possible obstruction of justice. Johnson says instead of protecting workers, Block retaliated against them for blowing the whistle on him.
When Block's efforts to remove those non-discrimination protections covering sexual orientation were disclosed, he actually retaliated against the staff that he suspected had been involved in distributing word of his actions. And the efforts to take down the union protections through the AFGE that some of those career workers at the OSC had, this led to a continuing conflagration.
A June 30th actors' strike in Hollywood could be in the script now that talks have collapsed between the union and the organization representing major studios. Jesse Russell reports.
Talks went on for 18 days before the Screen Actors Guild and the organization representing Hollywood studios pulled the plug on negotiations. SAG will use the break in contract talks to gauge the feelings of the membership. Those feelings may lead to a strike vote as early as next week. The primary issues causing friction are the same that sent Hollywood writers to the picket lines earlier this year: residuals from new media. Meanwhile, the studios are taking the opportunity to start negotiations with the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. The studios think they can reach a deal with the smaller AFTRA within 2 weeks, but SAG representatives have said they expect the union will get caught up in the same issues that ended SAG contract negotiations. The studios have already reached agreements concerning new media with the Writers Guild and the Directors Guild. Here is today's economic report. Chances are fairly high that you had a flight canceled in March. More than 28% of domestic commercial flights were canceled, diverted, or late, according to the Transportation Department. If that number sounds bad, consider that in February, more than 31% of flights had those same problems. On the other hand, an average of 6.7 passengers per every 1,000 complained of mishandled baggage in March. That's compared with 7.7 per 1,000 in March of 2007.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What will you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to do.
Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Guy James here with you, coming to you live from our beautiful Guy James Show studios. Hey, what do you think? Should we do the webcam thing? Do you think we should? Been talking about it. I don't know. We shall see. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here in the program. I thought you might be interested in hearing some of the history, general history for Thursday, 5808, May 8th. Harry Truman was born on this day near Lamar, Missouri. And in 1886, Atlanta pharmacist John Pemberton invented the flavor syrup for Coca-Cola. And in 1945, President Truman announced in a radio address that World War II had ended in Europe. Alfred E. Newman in 1956. Alfred E. Newman appeared on the cover of Mad Magazine for the first time. And in 58. I remember this very, very well. What a big deal this was. On this day in 1958, Vice President Nixon was shoved, stoned, booed, and spat upon by anti-American protesters in Lima, Peru. I remember seeing the pictures. I think it was, what, on Life Magazine, Look Magazine, one of them, where they pelted his limo with rocks and tomatoes and vegetables and all that sort of thing. It was a big, ugly mess. It was a humiliation for the United States. In 1967, Muhammad Ali was indicted for refusing induction to the U.S. Army. And in 1970, in conjunction with what we were talking about earlier, where are the protests about this war? Construction workers on this day in 1970 broke up an anti-war protest on New York's Wall Street. Remember that as well. In 1978, David Berkowitz pleaded guilty in a Brooklyn courtroom to the Son of Sam murders that had terrified people in New York for so long. And in 1987, on this date, Gary Hart withdrew from the race for the Democratic presidential nomination after the press hounded him about his relationship with Miami model Donna Rice. Wonder what ever happened to Donna Rice. Picture of him and Donna Rice sitting on the back of this boat, this yacht called, I believe it was called Monkey Business. I mean, Hart dared the press to try and find something on him, and they followed him until they did. And I remember that picture of the two of them sitting there, her in a bikini and him sitting in a chair in the back of this yacht, and very clearly. The name of the yacht, you know how it's emblazoned on the back of the yacht, it's a Monkey Business. And it was could have well been the title the title of the picture. And Gary Hart, a man that, had it not been for that, very well might have found himself in the White House in 1988 instead of Mr. Bush 1, or Bush whatever, Bush 41, I guess they call him in the family. I was thinking during the news, I was reading an article about oil. It closed at $123.69 today. I think that's another record, just by a few pennies. Regarding this oil crisis, and it's a crisis on paper, there's no shortage. The OPEC people are saying, oh, hell, there's plenty of oil available. Speculators are driving it up. Why not take a look at one of FDR's methods? And really, I have to credit FDR. He took a lot of chances. Of course, the nation was in such a condition at the time, they were willing to try anything. The people were willing to go along with just about anything. And they did. And Roosevelt came up with some pretty madcap ideas that worked and a couple that didn't. But I guess his thing was do something. Do something. Even if it's wrong, do something. And, you know, unless it's your desire to see oil prices continue to climb to the point where we go into a depression here, we need some sort of governmental action. I'm not smart enough to figure out what it should be, but something has to be done. Do something. Are we true? Am I talking through my hat here? Is it impossible for some sort of government involvement to help in this oil crisis? Is the world market absolutely killing us with that? The Chinese buy a lot of their oil, and in fact, I think they buy it directly from Russia. So there's not a shortage. OPEC says it's pumping plenty right now. It's speculation. The speculators who are driving the price of oil right now. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. They've been talking about this, and I'll say it wrong. I always do the strategic oil reserves for the military that we keep. I forget what it's called. But do we need to keep pumping a bunch of oil into that? I don't know. I don't know. But like you, I'm getting pretty damn tired of paying, well, what is it now, $3.72 a gallon here, and it'll surely go up in the next day or two. There isn't any question about it. It will go up. Hate to think about that. I really do. I don't know. I talk so much about politics lately and read so much, I'm getting sick of it, frankly. Not that I'm not interested, I am, but I'm so damn frustrated, and I know a lot of you are as well, and I sometimes wonder if I'm going to be able to keep my sanity until these Republican thieves get kicked out of office. This declaration by the idiot in chief just burns my behind, and I'm not saying, I'm not going to join in the chorus and say that everybody that got a mortgage that needs to be bailed out should be helped out. That's not true, especially those that never would have made enough money to afford all the house they bought. I know a couple like that that went out and bought a $450,000 house with no interest payments or interest only payments and. You know, on an ARM that went up, and now they're out of it. And yeah. I'm sorry, but that was a really stupid move. And I told them at the time it was a really stupid move. And a lot of people made some really stupid moves, but and got in over their heads because they bought something that they would never be able to afford. And these aren't the people I'm talking about. A lot of people went out in good faith and bought a home that was affordable for them, a home that was proper for them, whatever proper is for a home. But, you know, something that suited their family's needs without going crazy and having, you know, two extra bedrooms and two extra baths and a pool room and I don't know what all. And a lot of people did that. And if they did and they got upside down in a mortgage on that whole thing, why, I'm sorry, you shouldn't have done that in the first place, and maybe we shouldn't be thinking about helping the people. But a lot of people went out and bought a home that was just right for their family, and they're getting killed now with the ARMs and all that. But a flat-out veto threat by Bush on this bill to help people out while allowing the Fed to continue to bail out Bear Stearns and other financial corporations that got greedy, very greedy, while refusing to help homeowners is a complete and total bullshit. And if Bush knows it, everybody knows it. And where is that? I had a piece here from the New York Times. Here it is. The president on Wednesday repeated his opposition to a bill that will reward speculators and lenders who have suffered because of their own foolishness. More modest measures are pushed by Republican leaders, and Mr. Bush said those steps will do the right thing for the American people. He has the audacity to talk about rewarding speculators? What the hell do you call the people over at Bear Stearns? If they weren't speculators, what were they? And the rest of these investors that Bush and his people are willing to shore up with all this money the Fed's pouring in and with this bill that he wants to do. Oh, let's not help the homeowners. Let's not help the speculators. Speculators? Who's a bigger speculator in this whole thing than Bear Stearns? Who? And I would remind Mr. Bush that when the policymakers started cutting the funds rate last fall, when this subprime mortgage debacle was getting going good, was getting heated up, and the housing market meltdown was going good, they discovered that that tool had been rendered almost powerless. It's to the point, and I don't know how many people realize this, but it's to the point that the banks and the other key financial institutions with which the Fed deals, they'd been so shaken that instead of borrowing money and lending it out, they borrowed the funds and hoarded them to shore up their own liquidity. They feared that they might need the funds themselves. And so here we have our esteemed Bush vowing to veto the housing relief bill in the House. I find it just incredible. Bush said, I will veto the bill that's moving through the House today if it makes it to my desk, the president said at the White House. After meeting with Republican House leaders, I urge members on both sides of the aisle to focus on a good piece of legislation that's being sponsored by Republican members. Well, my goodness, sponsored by Republican members. Can't wait until this man is gone back to Crawford, Texas. I hope Mitch McConnell goes back to Kentucky. I hope Boehner goes back to Ohio. Blunt goes back to Missouri. I think he's from Missouri. And just leave us alone. I am so tired of and yet he wants Congress to pass a $108 billion war supplemental bill without any strings, meaning he didn't want a timetable on it or anything like that. And he wants to make his temporary tax cuts permanent. And he wants to allow environmentally friendly domestic exploration for oil. In other words, go out in the Gulf of Mexico and drill a hole every 15 feet if you want to, and spill as much of it as you want to. Go up in Alaska and Anwar and drill as much as you want to. Pollute the place till the animals are knee-deep in it. We don't care. That's the Republican policy on this. So, oh, don't worry. We won't hurt the environment. And really, the attitude on the Republican side is, so what if we do? The environment? Hey. We got this stuff here. The good Lord provided this earth and all the stuff on it, and let's just use it the hell up. Let's just use it up. Republican values. Let me recall what the Republican Party's been running on these past couple of decades. Family values. Personal responsibility, you remember those terms that's so popular with those folks. We've been told that their family values include God and country and all that is good on the good earth. And during this absolutely disastrous tenure of Junior Bush, however, we found that the Republican family values are something else entirely. Lying is okay. Deceit is okay. Stealing is okay. In fact, anything seems to be okay, except, of course, for a woman to have control over her body and for those who don't conform to the Republican idea of what one's sexual persuasion should be. And now we're seeing another perfect example of the hypocritical ways of the Republicans, and I hadn't talked about this, but I've wanted to. We've touched on it. But it's the perfect example of the hypocritical Republican Party. Mr. Rush Oxycontin Limbaugh, as you well know, is leading an effort to cheat the Democrats out of a fair primary election. He's exhorting his listeners to go to the polls in open elections and vote as Democrats. Even in primary elections that were not open, he advised them to register as Democrats so that they could tilt the outcomes of the contest. Yes, the titular leader of the Republican Party, Mr. Rush Drug Junkie Limbaugh, has asked his audience, his lame brain audience, almost every day, talking about his Operation Chaos. He has asked them to do this. Now remember, this is the party of family values and personal responsibility and all that's good. And he's been telling all of his listeners, hey, let's just go cheat, let's go cheat, let's lie, steal, and cheat, and let's throw the Democratic process out of whack, and let's all go vote in the Democratic primary. Even if you're a Republican, go sign up as a Democrat. That makes you a liar when you go do that, does it not? My challenge is, would any of you good family values Republicans care to call me and explain to me how any of this is morally acceptable? Explain to me how this isn't lying and cheating of the highest order. Please do explain that to me. I don't care which candidate it benefits. It is lying and it is morally reprehensible. I swear to you that if a Democrat suggested to do the same thing, I would abhor it. I would condemn any Democrat that suggested that Democrats go do the same thing in a Republican primary. But I do challenge any of our Republican listeners to call and tell me how this is morally acceptable for your leader, the most popular man in the Republican Party, the most popular Republican and conservative over the last two decades, telling his listeners to go out and lie, cheat, and steal in these primaries. You tell me how that's acceptable if you are a good Republican. But then what else have we come to expect? The leader of this movement, this Operation Chaos, this drug junkie, is a proven liar. He's a proven lawbreaker. He's a proven hypocrite who cannot be believed. In my opinion, he's a buffoon. He's a man of very low morals and very low character who readily passes out advice on how to live to others, and yet his own personal life has been an ugly train wreck. What, Mr. Limbaugh? Rush, the mighty Limbaugh? Rumors about Limbaugh's sexual identification are all over the place. Why is it that none of his ex-wives, you tell me if you've ever heard of it, why is it that none of his ex-wives have ever uttered a word in public about their problems with Mr. Limbaugh? Why is it that he was caught at a South Florida airport with a bottle of Viagra, which was not his, after visiting the Dominican Republic, a place known for child prostitution? Why is it that Limbaugh was paying a maid to illegally purchase prescription drugs for him, when with his wealth he could have gotten any prescription he actually needed quite legally, thank you? And why is it that for months on his program leading up to his arrest, that Limbaugh was mumbling and almost incoherent on his show, but his loyal subjects, they didn't suspect anything was wrong? They said he had a hearing problem. Here's a man who is rich and powerful and will do anything he can, legally or illegally, to get his way. He is interfering in an election where he has no right to do so. Yes, this is America and you can pretty much do what you want to, but this is illegal tampering with an election. And he does it to the glee of his followers. Oh, they think it's just great. This is funny. Oh, isn't this fun? Tell me what he'd be saying if the Democrats had a program to do the same thing against a Republican. Tell me what he would say, this leader of the Republican Party, this Pied Piper of the conservatives. this man who leads those good Republicans that have such high moral values. It must make all of you in the Republican Party mighty proud to know to be represented by such a terrific guy. It must make you feel really good inside knowing you're getting your political marching orders from a stand-up guy like Rush Limbaugh. Republican values indeed. Yeah, you think any of them care? I don't think so. Hey, a little story about people in the government. Don't know how many of you saw this. Typical, isn't it? Hundreds of laptops missing. Actually, thousands. But 400 of them missing in all of all places in the State Department out of their anti-terrorism assistance program. Yeah. The anti-terrorism assistance program is administered by the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security, the DS, which is responsible for the security of the department's computer networks and sensitive equipment, including laptops. And it also protects foreign diplomats during their visits here. And so they've had these vans driving all over Washington to collect and register employee laptops. Said the department sources who could not speak on the record for fear of being fired. That's a rich irony. $30 million worth of equipment. $30 million worth. Wow. Actually, there were several thousand laptops missing and still missing. They've accounted for most of the 400 out of that sensitive area to be found. And out of that $30 million worth of equipment, 99% of it was laptops. Now get this, the average State Department laptop costs $3,000. How many of you have a $3,000 laptop? Man, can't you go out and buy about the best one on the market today for about $2,000, even less? And you would think buying several thousand of them at a time, you could get a real deal. State Department paid $3,000 for them. Oh, my. But it's a real scandal going on, and said we're not talking about a missing laptop or two. Wow. Well, anyway, they're trying to recover what they can, and they're extremely embarrassed over the whole thing, as they should be. As they should be. 866-546-5254. Something I... the other day, somebody talked to me about this dirty campaign that's been going on. And I just thought I wanted to quickly mention this. Accusing Hillary Clinton of running a very dirty campaign. And I've been trying real hard to document what it is they're talking about. Realizing that both sides have slung a little mud at each other. But I don't think I heard anything quite like this out of the other side. This is Michelle Obama.
Campaigning in Chicago, Michelle Obama today told women why her husband should be the next president of the United States.
One of the things, the important aspects of this race is role modeling what good families should look like. And my view is that if you can't run your own house, you certainly can't run the White House. Can't do it.
Michelle Obama returned to her Southside roots to host a Women for Obama event at the Grand Ballroom on Cottage Grove.
Nothing you can take and tear me away from my God. Nothing you can. beautiful, my God. Tell me more. There's not a man today who could take me away from my God.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Always a pleasure to have all of you along with us here in the afternoon. Truly is. I want to thank each and every one of you that listen to the program and send all the great emails. I got an email during the break there that somebody wanted to know, how do I feel now about the primary? How do I feel? Yes, I've expressed my desire for Hillary Clinton to win the nomination. And I did vote for Hillary in the Florida primary, which doesn't seem to matter whatsoever what happened in the Florida primary. But I've been asked several times in the past couple of days since the Indiana and the North Carolina primary how I feel about it. And I think Hillary's victory in Indiana, although, you know, a month or two before, she wasn't expected to win Indiana and overcame quite a lead by Obama there to win it, and although Obama had a tremendous lead in North Carolina, it appeared for a while that Hillary had closed the gap, but turned out to be a pretty big victory for Obama there. So I think sooner or later, as courageously as you want to fight on, as hard as you want to fight on, it's probably time that I think it's over for Hillary. She fought the good fight. She's run a long, exhaustive campaign, raised tons of money, I don't know how many millions of dollars, fought against tremendous odds in some cases, and in my opinion, she was plenty capable of being the next president of the United States. But sooner or later, you have to admit to yourself that for all practical purposes, sans a miracle of some kind, it's over. And to go any further, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, to go any further now doesn't make any sense. And she's welcome to if she wants to. I'm not going to tell her to quit, but it's going to be very hard to raise the amount of money needed to go against Obama now. And it looks as though any momentum she had going after the Pennsylvania primary has probably played itself out. And realistically, you know, there's a time to fight and there's a time to proclaim a ceasefire and extend your hand in friendship to your Democratic rivals. And now's probably that time. Egos have been bruised and feelings have been hurt and there's been some friendships destroyed, maybe forever. But all of that aside, there is one thing that has to be considered in all of this, and that's the destiny and the future of this great nation. Obama was absolutely correct. I watched his speech the other night, and he was correct when he said this fight has never been about Hillary and never been about Barack Obama. It's been about winning the White House for the betterment of the country, perhaps to even save this country. And it's something that must be done if the United States is going to correct its course and become the nation it once was before it fell into the clutches of these terribly misguided neocons for the past three decades or so. And it's important that we totally repudiate this neocon movement, which, because of its greed and its corruption, has proven that it's not fit to govern this great nation. And let's face the facts here. And the fact is, we are infinitely worse off for having been under the rule of such people for so long. I wonder how many Republicans and even Reagan Democrats realize that their political god, Ronald Reagan, was really an abject failure. They don't want to accept that, but he was. He was a failure at governing this country. Their thinking is completely clouded by the fact that Reagan was... He was completely charming, and he was very persuasive in his manner, the great communicator and all that, but his governmental policies were leading us to disaster, and if he'd not left office when he did, he would have been exposed as the failure he really was. And I don't know how many of you agree with me, but the facts will bear this out. Had it not been for George Herbert Walker Bush and the Democratic Congress cleaning up Reagan's savings and loan disaster and raising taxes, read my lips, no new taxes, and raising taxes on the wealthy to bring the monstrous deficit that Reagan ran up back into control, Reagan's legacy would have been like that of Herbert Hoover's. Republicans want to deify Reagan, but are just totally dismissive of his huge failures as our president. And why? They needed a hero after the shame of Nixon, and Reagan was likable, and he was a good communicator, and he was absolutely masterful at fooling the voting public. And I don't have to lecture anyone on the failures of Junior Bush and his pathetic, lamentable two terms in the Oval Office. I don't have to say too much about him because I'm absolutely secure in the knowledge that he's leaving a legacy of shame, a legacy of immorality, and most likely criminality behind him, which will never, ever be forgotten. It shouldn't be forgotten. And it's going to be hard to pull out of this terrible hole that he's put us in, but I have faith that we can do it with the proper leadership. And yes, I have been for Hillary Clinton all along. I've met her many times, had the chance to have some meaningful conversations with her, and I found her to be completely charming and genuine. And I feel she would have made an outstanding president. And I've had much less experience with Barack Obama, but in my opinion, he'll make a great president as well. He's bright, he's energetic, and I think he's focused on doing the right thing for America. I don't agree with everything he says. I don't agree with everything Hillary Clinton says. But hopefully these good traits will overcome what I consider to be a real lack of experience. And you know, that's a personal thing with me. Lack of experience doesn't necessarily translate into being unqualified. And I was thinking about that the other day. I'm an avid college football fan. And I can recall many, many, many occasions when a relatively untested underclassman or second stringer was put in a crucial game and performed at the highest level and kept the job as the starter. So it doesn't always, experience doesn't always translate into what you need to be a great leader. And my hat's off to Barack Obama. He's run a great campaign. He's excited the voters, and he's brought many, and it's yet to be undecided. It's undecided how many new voters into the system, and I believe that with his leadership, America can retain regain the respect that we once had. I think the world community will readily accept him. He comes at the right time for America. He comes at a time when leadership is so desperately needed, good leadership, and a time when the neocons are going to make an all-out attempt to hold on to their political power, to continue on with their greed and their corruption and their warlock ways that are bankrupting this nation, bankrupting us both financially and morally. John McCain is not fit to hold the office of president because of his terribly misguided views on many things, but most of all, his worldviews and his obsession with continuing this Bush occupation in Iraq, no matter the cost, makes him especially dangerous for our country. And if he's allowed to win the Oval Office, this man may very well throw us headlong into a war in the Middle East from which we can't escape. And it appears that he's more than willing to go after Iran and Syria militarily. He's just another neocon who doesn't believe in the art of diplomacy. Might makes right. Another guy who would shoot first and ask questions later, like the cowboy we have in office right now. So, my congratulations to Barack Obama and to Hillary Clinton for running a hard-fought race. And let's let the healing begin and let both of them come to the realization that an Obama-Clinton ticket would be the best thing for America and for the Democratic Party. And as a team, I believe that they would be absolutely unbeatable and that they would have the knowledge and the experience to be the best presidential, vice presidential team that we've ever had. Forget the squabbles, forget the heated words and the charges against one another. It was typical politics, and it's coming to an end soon. Hopefully an end that will be a great benchmark for the Democratic Party and most of all for America. But I feel good that any time now, why, it's going to be over and, well, gee, I see on the chat room that they're talking about Jim Tressel. Yeah. Jim Tressel did coach Youngstown State to several national championships. Yes, sir. And now he's the coach at Ohio State and will be from now till he decides not to coach anymore, I think. How did I get started on college football? Oh, I guess I mentioned about people coming off the bench. But that's true. That's so very true. How many times you remember Archie Griffin, everybody, the double Heisman Trophy winner for Ohio State, the only man to have won it twice. I remember being at a game back in, I'm trying to think what year, 72 maybe. I think that was Archie's first year. And he was standing on the sideline. He wasn't a second teamer even. He was standing on the sideline, and we had an assistant coach, Rudy Hubbard. Things weren't going good in this game, and Rudy went over to Woody Hayes and said, put this Griffin kid in. And when they put Archie in the game, he had so little experience, and we had no experience playing in a varsity game, and his name, his number and name wasn't even in the program. I have the program. have the programs from all the OSU games I've been to. Anyway, Archie was unknown. I mean, people around Columbus knew who he was, but around the rest of the state, they didn't know who Archie Griffin was. And they put Archie, an untested kid in college football, in the game, and the rest is history. He won two Heisman trophies. So experience isn't always what it's cracked up to be. Not always. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a minute.
Music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
A little slow on the draw there, getting back in. Hey, thanks for joining us here this afternoon on the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Always glad to have every single one of you along with us. We appreciate your listenership, we really do. And we do appreciate all the great comments we get from you. Man, I got a bushel full the other day, and I do, you can tell I'm an ex-farmer, huh? Talking in bushels. Hey, a couple of funny stories. What did I do with this? Oh, here it is. Home foreclosure leads to a marijuana bust. The current economic situation has forced thousands of Americans into foreclosure, but the owner of one foreclosed home in Fontana, California, apparently had more than enough green to continue paying the mortgage. Police say a bank worker went to the foreclosed home last week and discovered more than 2,000 mature marijuana plants there. Man, the sales department must not have been doing their job. The Sun newspaper of San Bernardino says evidence at the scene led police to a second home where hundreds of additional marijuana plants were found. Police estimated the total value of the drug bust at $4.5 million. The owner of the foreclosed home, 30-year-old Angel Waihang Kao, I butchered that, has been jailed on numerous drug charges. Man. Oh. $2.5 million worth of pot in the house, and he is $4.5 million, and his house was foreclosed upon. Man, oh man. The guy, what was he doing with his money? He probably couldn't pay his mortgage. Spending all his money on potato chips and Cheetos down at 7-Eleven. I don't know. Man. Oh, that's an incredible story. Incredible story. And one other one. A German tourist got the ride of his life this week when his vacation trailer suddenly began rolling down a hill while he was inside. The bonus was he was sitting on the toilet at the time. Published reports from Austria say the trailer rolled more than 200 yards down a hill before crashing into a lamppost and then a ditch. Police say 48-year-old Jürgen Winkler was still sitting on the toilet when rescue workers arrived to help. A spokesman for the local fire department said Winkler suffered only minor injuries, but was extremely frightened by the experience. Oh, yes. I guess if you're going to be scared out of your wits like that, maybe sitting on a toilet is a good place to be. I guess it's probably trailer trash now, huh? Bada bump. Yeah, I should have the drummers here. I see John McCain is finally having to answer some questions about his endorsement from Reverend Hagee. And he's going to have to answer sooner or later about his association with Rod Parsley. And if you don't know a lot about Rod Parsley, I talked about him a little bit last week. He's a TV evangelist extraordinaire. he's a treat. He really is a treat. You need to look up Rod Parsley. But he is, as McCain says, McCain's spiritual advisor. His spiritual advisor. So you need to check out his association with John McCain. If Barack Obama has to answer to everybody about Reverend Wright, why it might be a good thing to check out John McCain's spiritual advisor. Good news, we do have another brigade heading home from Iraq. They're going to withdraw 3,500 U.S. soldiers here very, very shortly. They're going to be redeployed to Fort Benning, Georgia. That'll be a joyous celebration when they get home. I wish they could all come home. And they're going to bring home about 30,000 from the surge. But the bad news is there's going to be an indefinite freeze on further drawdowns so that military commanders can assess the ground situation in Iraq. Well, hasn't Petraeus already assessed it for us? Hasn't he already let us know that there's great product? Well, he did say it was reversible, right? Forget the exact word, tenuous and reversible. Anyway. Yes, it would be a wonderful thing to see all of our troops come home, but it's not going to happen for a while. Not going to happen for a good long while. And I'll tell you one thing that worries me. I'm a Democrat. I'm a liberal Democrat. Have been so my entire voting life. I would love to see both candidates. The race is still on, but love to see both candidates stand before us and swear an oath that they'd bring these kids home in the first 6 months or however long it's practical to do it of their term. And yet they will not do that. They have not done that. And I doubt that the average person in this country, the average voter, has any idea at all what the real withdrawal plan is for our troops by Hillary or Barack. We know what McCain's plan is. Maybe 10 years, maybe 100, I don't care. But I would really love to see Hillary or Barack make it abundantly clear that they have a plan, a bona fide plan, within just a few months to bring them home. All of them. To get out. No matter what, to get out. We know that the great majority of Americans think this war is wrong, think it was wrong from the very beginning. And I really think it would be a real revelation to have a Democratic candidate get up and promise, swear an oath, raise their hand and swear an oath to end this. It really would be something I'd love to see happen. But they're not going to do it. Neither one of them is going to do it. So, anyway, I'm just reading the chat room. Well, some people don't understand politics, I guess. Anyway, 866-546-5254, and I guess it's a little late for that. I don't know why I said it. So I want to thank you for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. Really appreciate you listening. We try to keep you informed and apprised of the political situation. I enjoyed talking to Larry Johnson, and hope you found that interesting as well. That's all for today. Look forward to talking to you again Tuesday. Thanks to the Head On Reddit Radio Network, and thanks to Billy Shears. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Many of you will be happy to know that I have no intention of talking about the Democratic primary this hour. No, there is a lot of news going on at home and around the world. And sometimes I can't devote an entire show to a single issue because, heck, I wouldn't get all the news out. So today I'm calling odds and ends, lots and lots of little details, news stories that have fallen through the cracks that you may not have heard before. And we'll just focus the entire show on these odds and ends. And if you've got an odd or an end that I don't bring up or that you wish to bring up, never hesitate to call in at 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON. Well, let's see. I guess my first odd end, if you will, is the fact that Russia is becoming a dictatorship and nobody's noticing. Here you have a new president, Medvedev, taking the oath of office. He was handpicked by Putin, the former president, who he then picked as the next prime minister. How convenient. We'll talk about that and also talk about the fact that a Guantanamo detainee that we let go has caused a suicide attack in Iraq. Why is it that our administration seems to feel that we should either hold innocent people without trial or let guilty people go? Here's an idea. Give them a trial. Keep the guilty ones. Let the innocent ones go. Is that too hard to figure out? In Lebanon, you have Iran fomenting civil war again. Apparently, they're trying to take over the government. No real surprise there, when the Iranian president Ahmadinejad is basically declaring himself the Messiah. We'll talk about that as well. Meanwhile, here at home, we have a housing bill that really could help a lot of Americans, put forward by my former boss, Congressman Barney Frank. And because it could help a lot of Americans, of course, George Bush has threatened to veto it. Meanwhile, the FBI is being forced to back off some of its national security letters. You see what happens when libraries fight back? Librarians, get up their library cards, the FBI folds. And then there's just these stories that are just fun. Everything from Republican Vino Fossolino's drunk driving arrest, where he seems to have forgotten the alphabet, to the firing of Mary Gade, head of the Environmental Protection Agency, a regional administrator, for trying to make sure that Dow Chemical cleans it up. The fun part about that is they said she left to be with her family. And then my favorite story, the one I'm going to start with, the story of a would-be congressman by the name of Tony Zirkle. And he is in Indiana. And I don't know whether this is fitting of Indiana or not. I don't want to besmirch the entire state. But Tony Zirkle...